Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Banaska Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show. And we are on scan number 2911 this evening, and we are just going to have an open discussion. So feel free to call in. Just have an open mic forum, and we'd love to have anybody participate who is available. That number is 646-595-2118. And we've got Carol and Bill on here with us, so we'll be just chatting along, and unless somebody calls and gives us a subject, then we'll figure out one. But here at NASCA, we have a single purpose, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with two goals. One, by educating the public, especially as it's related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And also offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So thank you, Carol, for being on tonight.
Hey, you're welcome, sweetie. It's good to be on. I don't mind. But even if I don't feel well, my mouth goes, doesn't it? I don't know. But, you know, that's just the way it is. And you said Bill's there, too. I don't have my computer open right now because I know you're running it. And if people call in, you can open up their mics, or Bill can do that. He's there. Is he there?
Let's see. I'm going to bring him on.
I'm here.
Okay, good.
There he is.
Okay, that's good. Yeah.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Bill.
Hi, how you doing?
If you want me to, I can be the one that opens mics and stuff. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, go ahead, because I have mine closed, and I have medicine in me. I don't feel that great, so.
Oh, I'm sorry you're not feeling well.
Well, my arm is getting operated on. Actually, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Because I'm tired of it, you know, every single day. So, but anyway, yeah. So, but that's okay. You know, I don't want to eat painkillers. People like me shouldn't be doing that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, you know, I don't want to live that way either. So get it over with already. That's what I'm going to tell them, too, when I see them on Friday.
Make it better. Make me the bionic woman if you have to. I don't care. Just get rid of the pain.
Right. Absolutely. Exactly. You got it.
Yeah. How many things can we have on that?
Yours
is rotator cuff?
Rotator cuff, frozen shoulder, and something capillitis, impingement, that's a frozen shoulder. My arm is destroyed, so we're trying to put it back together again, okay? Let's put it that way.
Do you think that some of that is from your trauma?
Well, you know what, I'll tell you what, the guy across the street, I call him Ponytail. Anyway, he had this done also, this operation. It's really pretty
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have problems one way or another. Mine
yeah.
was done by a needle that was put in wrong. You can get it from any shot that isn't given the right way. I want people out there to know this. And you end up like me.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Isn't that fun? Okay, so, but anyway, he had the same thing. Mm-hmm. And after the operation, he was had to go for more physical therapy. And then all of a sudden, he's okay. So if he can do it, I can do it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And my dad has done it, and he's the biggest baby ever. He's done it 3 times, mm-hmm. actually. So he's had to have 3 of them. I know it's painful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not an easy operation to go through.
It's not easy. I know that.
We'll be in our prayers. Let us know when it is. But what I was wondering is because, you know, he's even a survivor. And
mm-hmm.
I know that he's had many different issues now, and he's only 74, so he's not even real old, but he has just, or no, two, 72.
Mm-hmm.
But all kinds of, like I said, he's had 3 of those rotator cuffs. So I wonder if even that can come, you know, even though it comes from a trauma, but it's still maybe a weak area in your body or something that is more susceptible to, you know, if a shot hits it, then maybe it'll.
Well, you know, it's a well-known fact. The studies have been done, okay? And, you know, I'm always on the computer looking things up.
I love statistics.
I was taught a lot, too. And then just by we being survivors, we know this. We're more apt to get more maladies, let's call it maladies, than people.
Yeah.
Well, haven't been abused, okay? And like fibromyalgia, that's a well-known one. A lot of people have fibro. Yeah. And that's not much fun. And heart problems, digestive problems, absolutely. Just all kinds of things. And, a lot of times I read off the list. I don't have it in front of me right now. And I'd probably be blurry-eyed if I looked at it anyway. So, but anyway, the point is, we do tend to get more things. We do. And then, of course, there's the mental issues. Okay.
Right.
I'm Miss Panic Child. Why did I write that book? I wrote it because I was a panic child. Hey, I know about
right.
that. So, you know, the idea is to get educated yourself, to get the help that you need. It doesn't do anyone any good to go around filled with, you know, hatred towards their abusers. I had so many. And all of us have, many of us have, not all of us, but many of us. One time is too much, okay? So, but I do know that if you walk around with the hatred that I once felt, believe me, I felt it, it makes you sicker. It does.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that I forgive these people, because I don't. That's up to me to decide, okay? I gave it to
absolutely.
God, because he's bigger than me, all right? He's bigger than all of us.
Right.
And
yes.
The way I look at it, yeah.
Amen.
The way I look at it is someday they'll be sitting before him, and they'll have to answer. And I believe in heaven. I believe in hell. My son believes in purgatory. I'm Catholic. I should, too. He thinks we're in purgatory right now, and this is our last chance. Yeah,
I've heard
that. That's what he thinks.
Yeah.
And you know what? He might be right.
My husband was Catholic, but he really
mm-hmm.
has never practiced since we've been together for 35 years. So
mm-hmm.
he never shared a whole lot of it with me, but he went to Catholic schools growing up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But,
well, it only makes common sense
bit.
To me. Yeah. And
it
makes sense to me. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
You know, it
yeah.
does. I'll tell you why. Because we have free will, right? We do.
Right.
And so my guess is, now I'm a little rough, tough person, you know. maybe in another lifetime I wasn't very good. I don't know, you know. So, okay, I popped out, and maybe this is my last chance. And I'm going to go up or I'm going to go down, okay. So we're not judged by our deeds alone, by the way. We're judged by what's in our heart also. So I think to myself, I could go around really easily hating all of these people because there are so many, different circumstances and all this other stuff. But what's the point? Because that's why we do have so many physical maladies, all of us. You know, we have so many problems, you know, not with the rotator cuff. That was by a needle. That has nothing to do with anything. But, you know, I mean, you know, more the physical, the heart problems, the stomach problems, and the mental issues. Yeah. And we don't know how to have good relationships, all right? Many times we choose them properly. I did that twice, and I said, honey, three times you're out. I'm not going back there again. I'm never going to get married again.
I've only done it once, and I wouldn't do it again.
No, I'm not going to do it. I don't know how to choose
they
nice
can just come
guys.
Visit.
I don't know how to choose nice guys, you know. I mean, how can you tell, you know, if they're really good or not until they have you. And then when they have you, it's too late. Okay, that's what happened to me twice. So I don't want to do that the third time. You know, I mean,
I just don't.
No,
I'm sorry that happened.
Yeah. Well, my first marriage was my mother's famous word was hideous. Everything was hideous, and I hated that word because she said it so much. Well, everything's hideous, all right. She was right, but anyway. The second marriage, I did better with Marty. Yes, I did. And I was thinking today of all the good things that we did do, the good places we went, castle hunting. I love castles, okay?
Oh, really?
I don't know. Spooks might come out. That'd be interesting, you know what I'm saying? And
did you ever go to the one in Colorado Springs?
What was that?
In Colorado Springs? Have you ever
been
west?
Have I been? No. Mm-mm.
No, there's a really, really neat castle that's open, and you can go and have tea parties in it, and, you know, it's really fun. It's in Colorado.
Well, that sounds
Springs.
Like charming.
Colorado.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe I'll go there myself.
Anyway, yeah, you just said it. Continue. Sorry, I interrupted you. Continue.
I don't know.
But, yeah.
Yeah, you know, there were so many things we did do. I mean, we went to Broadway. He was born and raised in New York. I was born in New York, upstate. But he was born and raised in Brooklyn. And, you know, we went to so many Broadway shows. I went to over 50. And, you know, not all of them were great. You know, there's some better than others. But we went. You know, that's the thing. So you start looking backwards. If you have a marriage that had some good points to it, and we did have some good points, absolutely. And he became sick with 9/11. He was over there in the city working all the time, over by Church Street, getting his orders. Yeah. That's where the towers are. You know, that got hit, remember, so many years ago now.
Yeah.
And people are still dying from that. I don't understand that, but they are. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the point is... Well, how can you take a knife and slice the ear? I don't get it. Go on this side and you'll be okay, but don't go on that side because you won't. I don't understand that stuff. But the point is, it's still in the air, and people continue to get sick. It's disgusting what happened. I mean, my husband lived it, and he came home and he was full of dust. He was full of it. And his car was full of dust. And see, it's that dust and being in those areas, even over in Staten Island where he used to live. I lived in Staten Island. He, you know, people said that air was over there also. And in Brooklyn, there's so many different areas, you know, that it just went to because air is air and it goes, doesn't it? So, you know, so many people did get sick from that. So, but anyway, getting back to, you know, like child abuse. I mean, right now, the reports are staggering. And, you know, let me tell you something. I was wondering if because of everything that's happening in our world, okay, and there's a lot to look at. I look at the news all the time, so I'm a news buff, all right?
Yeah.
So I see all this stuff, you know, and I can't be alone. A lot of people are looking at the news, right? People, they're not thinking about actual child abuse so much as they were before because they have big things to look at in their own lives, you know. And, like, are we going to be next to get nuked? You know, all kinds of stuff. Is China going to do something? Is this going to happen? Is that going to happen? And people trying to put, you know, food on their table, the prices of inflation. Well, let me tell you something. Child abuse has gone up, okay, even from before. Because, you see, people, especially those that are survivors, and I'm not going to zero in on them as being the only offenders, don't get me wrong. But people are scared, they're nervous, they can't handle stress well. And a lot of survivors, you know, go through that because we were already there. So that's what's making even the stats go higher with the child abuse. You know, they're taking it out on their kids. And even if they're not taking it out on their kids, Kim, there's a lot of fighting going on between the adults because maybe there's lack of money, or maybe the jobs aren't quite right. They have to downsize with all kinds of stuff. And instead of thinking about their children, they end up, you know, screaming in front of them. Sometimes there's blood flying. You know, I saw a lot of that. And, you know, this everything affects children very negatively. But I can tell you this, that every 10 seconds in the United States, in our country, okay, more than 4 million calls are made to Child Protective Services at this point. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is from Child Health.
I agree.
Yeah. And then also, too, another organization, I wrote it so fast that I can't read my own writing, but it says child abuse and neglect, 3.9 million, so it's about the same number. They call it maltreatment. Now, Bill and I don't like that. Call it what it is. Maltreatment sounds, I don't know, it just sounds silly. But referrals reported in 2020 that 7.1 million children, 7.1 million children, 90% of the victims were abused by one or both parents.
Yeah.
Now, they're talking about in all different ways and forms of child abuse with that. But the point is, either one or both parents were doing it, one way or another.
Yeah.
And then domestic abuse in February 1st of this year, police made an average of 669 child protective referrals to social services every day. This was just last year because of incidents of domestic abuse. That's crazy. So you see, we have, there's more here I have, but you see, we have these stats that come up from, you know, from .gov. They always have a very long blah, 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 and then finally .gov, but from the government. And then also to Child Help, which is, you know, something that we very much believe in. I would like to have them on the show. I will call them. I'm going to call them this week. But, you know, they always have very accurate statistics. So if it comes from Child Help and if it comes from the government, then I tend to, you know, believe that those stats are right. So, you know, it's something for people to think about out there. Yes, we're going through terrible times right now in our country. It's so divided. There's just so many problems. And no sense in going into all of them. You know what they are, and, you know, it's an everyday occurrence. And I don't really know exactly what it's going to take to stop that. I mean, I have my own personal views, which I won't view on this show. But, you know, the point is, in the meantime, we have our kids. And we're not teaching our kids right.
Yeah.
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 We're not teaching them right. What do they see? They're listening. The news is on. The kids over here, you know, if they're old enough, they can understand some of it. They see the actions of the parents, all the tension, and what are we going to do if this happens and what if that happens. And then we have those people, Kim, which I run into every once in a while, which blows my mind. And I speak to them about teaching them about, I always call it the good, the bad, and the ugly, because, look, there's pedophiles all over the place. And studies have been done. I have some of the stats right here. Studies have been done that, you know, with the pedophiles, you know, you cannot make them change. I am sorry. I was going back and forth online with some people. They don't like me much, and I don't much care. I really don't. But too many studies have been done for decades. For decades. Okay. How do you change a pedophile? How do you make a pedophile stop being a pedophile? You can't. Because if you have 3 decades, we're talking about 30 years, all right, of study. And after 30 years of study, they haven't come to a conclusion yet as to how to fix them. Let's put it fix, we'll say fix them. Make them be different. Then I don't think there's much hope, okay, after 30 years of intense study. Sometimes they'll take, I'm going to say maybe 500 pedophiles, say, and they'll really go into their brains and go into how they feel. And that's why we have one of the things on intervention, I think it's under, I had found that some years ago, and I sent it to Bill. And it was written by pedophiles. And they speak about the grooming process. They speak about, you know, how they lure children. And sometimes there is no grooming process. Sometimes it's just you get kidnapped. Like Bill got kidnapped. I got kidnapped. Many people have gotten kidnapped that are on NASCA. And but they would, like, interview these people, you know, over some time. And they would come out with all different kinds of reasons as to why they were the way they were. But they all came to the same conclusion, you know. No, I can't be trusted by children, even though I've been incarcerated, many incarcerated, and many times not incarcerated, but in, you know, programs like this one program I'm thinking about. They can't be fixed because they're different. I'm going to be kind. They're different, okay?
Yeah.
So those people out there who think that, you know, organizations – just for those who are pedophiles. I mean, I tried to have an open mind when we had a guest on a few weeks ago, and I said, well, I hear you're having a lot of empathy, you know, for the pedophiles, for the sex offenders, okay? But I have an open mind. If you can show me proof that these people can be worked with and changed, for God's sake, share it. Show it to me. Show it to all of us. Show it to the world. Because then maybe we get that dent in the statistics of child abuse when it comes to the sexual. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, so far I haven't heard back from that person. And I don't really expect to. But the truth of the matter is, in the meantime, even if this person had some validity, let's just say, you know, that it was true. In the meantime, we still have these terrible stats sitting in front of us. Okay? And so my thought is that they have to be incarcerated. And as I said on that night when we had our guest, I said that I think that those who are caught for the first time should be given a very stiff sentence, because we know from studies that have been done that they've offended approximately 128 times. Now, it's 10 times with one kid, maybe 5 times with another. 20. You do the math, it doesn't matter how you do it. Its point is, and this was also in the article that I had sent Bill some years ago now, a few years ago. They can't be trusted, and they've offended many times. And if you don't teach your children about the good, the bad, and the ugly, they will learn it from us. That's what one guy said, from us.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, there's a difference, and everybody said this too, because most people know this, there's a difference between forgiving and forgetting. So, you know, even though I chose to forget my dad, I haven't ever forgotten. And there have been a lot of boundaries set, you know, throughout my adulthood that, you know, he understands now. And, and of course, I would never let him alone with my kids either, because that is just, you know, asking for trouble. And
absolutely.
Unfortunately, somehow my mom, you know, because of her abuse as a child, mostly sexual, she didn't quite, I think, grasp how to protect me, basically. And it was just like, oh, it happened. You know, I was like, no, it doesn't just happen. I mean, yeah, you've got to put things in place so that your kids, you know, like you say, educate them, for one. And the difference between, you know, me just trying to protect my kids and being more of a, I say helicopter mom. I don't think I was quite that bad, but I did put myself in the school and in the church Sunday school classes and things like that so that I was around whatever they were doing. And so I always made sure that I did that. But I now, with my grandkids, I can just, I have body safety books that I have on their bookshelf, and I also take them with me to some of my classes, you know, and I explain this is a great way to just get your kids to start talking to you at a very young age, because that's when you need to start as soon as possible, is start talking to them. You know all this, and that's some of our listeners do, and some of them might not. But yeah, start talking to them at a young age, because that you need to, they need to know their body parts, and that their body parts are their body parts, and private parts, and you know, nobody could touch them. And my grandkids, well, many times I see my granddaughter, who's now almost 10, reading those books on her own. So when they were younger, they would bring them to me whenever they felt like they needed to be encouraged. And so, you know, that's one way that we can start the process of prevention. Does it minimize, you know, 100%? No. But, you know, start just that conversation, and being open with your children is going to be huge. And that's what I didn't get. And I assume maybe, you know, most of our survivors that are on this show didn't get that, you know, or they got watch out for the stranger danger, you know, and that whole thing.
Right. The stranger danger. That's only 10%.
But that's only 10%, they say. It's like 10% of people are strangers to the child, so that doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't.
Well, if I can just interject, because I've been thinking as you've both been talking that,
yeah.
You know, as far as bringing up children who are who you want to keep whole, obviously, and keep growing, that it's of course it's an educational process. It's that you can't not do. nobody did anything with me, and I'm sure that's very common with the age group that I'm in. Nobody mentioned anything about sex at all, and so I learned it on the playground, as I say. And I didn't learn very well. I learned playground information, you know, and it didn't do me any good. There's another part to it, too, and that's we're wiser in these days that, you know, it's not just a matter of teaching our kids. It's also a matter of kind of accompanying them, let's say, until they are big enough to fend for themselves, which is what Kim is saying, you know, going to the Sunday school classes, being in the environment that they are in, they know grandma or ma is around. That makes a difference. So, also, it's telling anybody who might be interested in our kids that we're there. You know, we're physically there,
right?
And watching and know the issue well. So I think it's a matter of we have to teach the kids, yeah, but we also have to participate ourselves. And I think a lot of people fall down because they don't participate themselves. They think they've done enough, but But I don't think they have, because today's today's problem is huge. Like Carol was saying, pedophiles, we have tested, you know, fixing, treating pedophiles for a long time. It still goes on, you know, and God bless them. I hope they've come up with something, but they haven't so far. Very rarely there'll be some success in one area or another, but they've tried, you know, surgical things and chemical things and, of course, psychological things and therapies of all kinds. They've done shock stuff. So they've done all kinds of things. They've done medicine, chemicals that you take, pills that you take, and so forth. And none of it has really significantly made a difference, made a significant difference. Some of it has a temporary effect, and then it goes away. And, you know, the urge to have sex with kids comes right back, is what I understand.
That's
so, you know, it just comes right back. So as Carol was saying, I don't know if there's anything better than separating the pedophiles from society. And unfortunately, you can't keep them all away all the time. You can only identify however many you do, and there's only so many, you know, sort of prisons, you know, cells and so forth in facilities to keep them. But there are programs now that they don't release even prisoners that have served their entire time, you know, they don't release them. They go to a second program, and they're still incarcerated, but they're in a different kind of incarceration. But they are not allowed out in public again. And I actually think we probably should be thinking about doing that pretty much everywhere. But it's occasionally done now. But anyway, the point is that you're right that the situation is horrible now. And I think, you know, as far as all the stuff that's going on in the world that upsets us, you know, it's the same story as the person that's upset, you know, the boss beats up the worker, so the worker goes home, beats up the wife, and the wife goes and beats up the kid, and the kid kicks the dog, right? It comes downhill. It all comes downhill. Well, that's what's kind of happening. I think a lot of us are, you know, frustrated on just the basis of wanting to have an easier life, and it's not coming that way, but or a cleaner life, and it's not coming that way.
No,
but anyway, go ahead. I'll chime in a little while again.
Okay. Well, I want to say something about what you just said. First of all, they go before the board. When people are incarcerated, especially if they've been a danger to other people, right? In order for them to get out, even though their time is up, say they were given 8 years. Sorry, that's not good enough. We'll just use that number. They're given 8 years, and they go before the board, and if they can make it through the board, then many times they go into a halfway house, as they call it. The halfway house, you're still incarcerated, but they very slowly let you go back into society. You have to have a job. They help you, you know, they help you get jobs and all this other stuff. Very hard for sex offenders to go out and find a job because they ask, have you ever been, you know, have you been in trouble for that? Okay. Have you ever been incarcerated? Has it ever been sexual abuse? It could be anything, whatever. And you can't lie because they're going to do background checks on you and so forth and so on. So it makes it difficult, you know, for them to get a job. But until they have their act together, okay, they don't let you out of the halfway house. And sometimes the halfway houses, they become overloaded with people. And that's a difficult thing. They should have more halfway houses. Now, but what they've found through studies, the tier one, the ones who, you know, say they were never caught before. And I have to put it that way. They weren't caught before. This is their first time at being caught. What they do is a lot of times if they do get out into society again, they still commit crimes, but it might be petty theft. I've written about this online. Petty theft, something stupid. And they'll go back into, you know, being incarcerated for a certain amount of time. And some of them, you see, they know that they're not right, Bill. They know that there's something wrong with them. One guy that I happen to know of, and it became, I think it went viral, he was going to get out of prison and go into the halfway house, and he knew that he wasn't going to be able to make it out in society. He went and kicked a toilet to pieces, okay? And he was held much, much, much longer because he destroyed government property. That's ridiculous. But the point is, he blew his own case by doing that rather than to go back out into society because he knew that he couldn't be trusted. So there's no real answer for these people, nothing that I know of, okay? And I did say on that show that night that there are two pedophiles in my family, which is true. And if you want to go a little further, extended, there was three. So the whole thing is revolting to me because I had to look at these people, okay, and I knew what they were. And unfortunately, in families, when there's a lot of abuse that does take, you know, place, they don't get that person. They don't kick them out. They don't look at them as a toxic person. They do everything but turn them over to the police because they don't want the embarrassment of hearing, oh, well, so-and-so down the street, you know, her brother or her sister or whomever, or father or uncle, whatever, you know, is a pedophile and they're in jail, because then the whole family feels like they're going to become black sheeps to society, so they'd rather keep their mouth shut. And boy, is that doing a disservice to society by keeping your mouth shut, because then that person isn't removed and put in jail, and, he continues, or she continues, and we don't talk about the females enough. It's not helping society.
Well, let's ask people to call in tonight, Kim, if that's okay. Let me just interject that, you know, this is supposed to be a community show. And,
absolutely.
I'd love for anybody that's listening to just dial our regular number, which I'll repeat for you a couple of times here. But, you know, we want your input. And if you're interested in these topics or any topic that relates to child abuse and trauma and it's reform or any kind of reform, for example, dealing with pedophiles or how you think they should be dealt with, give us a call. The number is 646-595-2118, 646-595-2118. And I think it'd be wonderful to have a few more people join us, and, you know, we've bounced some ideas off of us, and we'll bounce some off of them. And, make this more of a discussion for really the community at NASCA. That's the idea of these shows. So thanks very much for letting me interject that, ladies.
Well, that's what it should be. You know, when we have these shows on Tuesdays and Thursday nights, a lot of us have a lot of information, you know, and we can come up with all kinds of things to talk about. But, you know, the point is this. If people did call in, just to ask a question or even to make a comment about something that's been said and spoken about. This is good because we can bounce ideas back and forth, you know, that makes it good, better for everyone. We all have our information. A lot of us have a lot of education in this field, and we're survivors on top of it all. Well, you know what I'm saying? That's the best education, I think, right there, to be honest with you. But, you know, the point is, you know, it's happening every day, and people just don't get that it can happen to their child. They don't want to think that it can happen to their child. What parent would, as long as they're coming from a family that's, you know, together, not one that's dysfunctional.
Well, it can happen very easily to any child. This is the pandemic of our era, I think, not COVID. I mean, yeah, COVID's bad, but, you know, you can't escape this, unless you're really kept indoors almost. and then you might not be able to trust the nurse, or whatever. But
oh, jeez.
considering the statistics of this, mm-hmm. you know, there are pedophiles in every community, multiple pedophiles in every community. In fact, I sometimes have said, you know, it would be almost impossible to find a street in Los Angeles or in anywhere in the country, you know, where you couldn't find at least some kind of sex offenders or something. That's how it works. Now, they don't all rape everybody, but they all there are plenty of them that do lesser degrees of damage to many people. You know, they don't all do it to one person, as Carol's saying. They do it to multiple people over time. So this is a hugely important thing that the community needs to understand, that the statistics of the thing are such that you know pedophiles. You know a bunch of them, because mm-hmm. about every 10th person or maybe 15th person you know mm-hmm. has a predilection for this, and many of them are active. And that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. You know,
right.
It's a sickness, yeah, but it is avoidable if we can catch it early enough. That's really the best time. I should have said that before too. If you can catch a person that has a penchant for twiddling with little kids, playing with little kids, having sex with little kids, if you can catch them when they are a teenager, there is a much better chance that you can redirect them and have them grow into a more healthy adult. Maybe not completely healthy, but a lot more than once the thing sets in is the point. You can't get it away. You can't escape it once it sets in. So there has been some success with folks that are in their teens, and of course they're usually just a few years older than the person that they're abusing. They might be 17 and they're abusing somebody who's 13, you know. Yeah, that happens. But if you can catch them then, you might be able to work with them in terms of cognitive therapy and other things, that and certainly spirituality, which is really important. We don't talk about that enough, frankly. But you can change the mind of a person that's around that age. Not later, though, because it seems that if once you have the appetite for the kid, for the sex with kids, you don't lose it. You just don't lose it.
But unfortunately, what you're saying is true. I mean, I hope it's true. But they have, I mean, if you read that pedophile thing again, these people, all right, who are afflicted with this, they're like vampires, all right? their prey is children. And they know that by the time they're 13, now this is something that they all agree on, but I thought it was 15, and now they changed it to 13, that they're different. In fact, someone said just the other night that even much younger, now I don't know, I don't have the information on that, but I do know that 13 is a number that's coming up more frequently. They know that they're different.
To mean
so what do
what?
They do with kids?
13 meaning what?
Well, as being a pedophile, the ones, the younger ones that you're speaking about.
At 13 years old?
At 13 years old? Yes.
No.
Let me finish. Let me finish, Mom.
Okay.
Mama knows her business.
Sure.
Mother knows her business. Okay, now. By the time they're 13 years old, they know that there's something funny about them. They know that they're different. They're not, you know, usually when a kid, and I think back, but when you were 13 years old, I'm sure you were very interested in girls, were you not?
No, I was so mixed up with the men that were coming after me, I had no opportunity to go after girls.
Well,
I was very confused.
Thinking about them, weren't you? I think you were.
No,
I
was up to the point, that I didn't think I was interested in men. I knew I wasn't interested in men, so therefore I didn't think I was a homosexual. Yet all these guys were coming on to me. I didn't understand that. And it didn't really, I was in a more enclosed, perhaps, environment than a lot of boys are, but that also made it difficult for me to meet girls. I couldn't meet them. until I got to college, really. I met a lot of girls in college. But before that, you know, I had an occasional thing or little dates, and, you know, I went to the cotillion with somebody from the neighborhood, stuff like that. But I did not have any regular girlfriends until later. So
okay.
You can't use
okay.
me as a standard, you know. But
okay.
I can tell you that, yeah, but I can tell you that I think the child that's 13 years old is confused sexually no matter what. You know, think about being a 13-year-old girl, right? Your mind
oh,
is now.
I knew what I
especially.
Liked. I knew what I liked.
But it's
oh,
all
no.
over the place is the point. You knew what you liked, but you didn't know what was safe for you. You didn't know what was good for you. You know, you didn't know what was right for you. You knew what you wanted. Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, there has to be a kind of a sense of maturity to go along with it for us to say you're in a healthy sexual position. And 13-year-olds are not, no matter who they are. You know, they don't have enough experience. And
are you
they
sure about that? Are you sure?
What?
When I was 13, let me tell you what. When I was 13 years old, when in 8th grade, 9th grade, whatever,
yeah.
I knew that I liked boys, and I knew that I was going to chase boys, and they chased me,
that's
too,
not
and that
what
was
I'm
fun.
Talking about. I'm not talking about that you liked boys. I'm talking about how you thought you could have a meaningful relationship,
oh,
right,
no. Yeah,
with a boy that was 5 years older than you. That's who you were interested in, or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that was BS, of course, but you certainly believed it. You know, with all your heart of hearts, you believed it. You'd have fought your mom and so anybody that came around and said different. You know, that is how, you know, it's the awkwardness. Let me just say it this way. It's the awkwardness of the adolescent. There's a growth period that you go through where you don't really know. You think you know, but you don't really know. And you think your parents don't know, but they do know. A little better, anyway. And it's just the rite of passage that we all go through. Okay? And now if you add a pedophile in there, that person is capable of confusing you in addition to your own confusion as a kid. You know, it's hard to grow up. Okay? We all went through it, and we all made mistakes, and we all remember the uncomfortability, the angst we felt as we were developing. But some of us, unfortunately, then were taken advantage of by pedophiles, and that really twisted our minds and made us very angry, at least, you know, confused.
I think with me, because my abuse started when I was six, all right? I was 6 years old, and then that's when that weird uncle of mine, you know, he didn't actually enter me because, don't forget, I was living with an aunt. She was weird, too, but that's a different story. And he would, you know, he wouldn't enter me because there'd be blood, and then she'd know there was something going on. So he would get, you know, this, I'm rather graphic, but this is what happened. He got on top of me, and he took his pants down and, you know, all this other stuff, and ejaculated that way. Well, I was scared to death of him. I thought he was going to kill me, and he almost did by a vehicle.
Right.
Because
sure.
I squealed on him. All right, so it took me a year and a half to do it. So anyway, the point is this. I was frightened of him. The point is this. It never turned me against guys. I always knew that I wanted, you know, I wanted a boyfriend when I got a little bit older. And maybe, you know, as I got even still older, and for a short period of time, I was very inward and I was bashful, believe it or not. I was shy, me, right? But I was very introverted. And I that was after I got kidnapped and raped in New York. I went through a period of time. That was at the age of between 8 and 9. I was kidnapped and raped. And so there was a time where I didn't want any men around me or any boys around me, but that didn't last long, okay? And then I think as I got a little older still, then I became promiscuous. You know, I was out in the street anyway. So I wasn't, when I say I was turned off, I didn't mean sexual in a sexual way. I was just afraid of them, scared to death of them because of what happened. So, but then as I got a little bit older, by teenage years for certain, like by 12, 13, 14 years old, I was a little hottie. That's what I was. I was called that the other day. That's funny. I was a little hottie. I wanted to get out there and be with the boys. And so I had no question in my mind that I wanted to have, you know, relationships with boys. I wanted to go out with boys. I wanted to go out on dates with boys. And for quite a while there, you know, between the ages, say, of 14 and 17, I was with quite a few different boys. And, of course, I thought I was in love with a couple of them, madly.
That's what I'm saying, Carol. That's what I'm saying. I'm not making the argument or trying to make an argument about what sexuality you identify with. In my case, there was no choice until I got away from home, really. As I went to a minor seminary, I was in a boarding school with priests and brothers and kids and boys and nothing else. So that, you know, there wasn't an opportunity, but I knew I was not interested in men. And that's what confused me. Now, I'm not trying to talk about that part of who I am. I am trying to talk about how we're, all of us, likely to make mistakes of various types when we are young. And perhaps well into our 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s and maybe when they get married twice. You know what I mean, Carol?
Oh, yeah. I got married twice. So, didn't do me any good.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. So that's more what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the sexual identification. I never identified with being gay, but I was stuck in a place where I couldn't get out of it, and I didn't know how to get out of it.
Right.
And every time I tried, it was thwarted. So, you know, but I am saying that an adult or anybody that's a little older has an advantage over a child. Anybody who's a little younger. And you can see this, you know, with the children who they wanted, girls, for example, want to date an older boy, usually, or quite frequently anyway, you know, and they have the ability to attract an older boy because boys are more awkward anyhow. And hey, if a boy has a motorcycle or a car, that's even better. You know, sure. So, I mean, this is how it works in the world. And it has nothing to do with pedophilia unless you're dealing with pedophiles, and then it does.
No, right.
But it has a lot to do with awkwardness and indecision and not knowing how to choose and all that. I'm sorry, Kim, are we talking over you?
Yeah, well, I don't know if we're talking over her, but I want to hear what she has to say.
Me too.
Oh, I think she ran away. Go ahead. Are you still there?
I think she needs oxygen.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening to you.
You scared her, Bill. That's what you did. Go ahead. I'm teasing. Go ahead.
No, so what you guys are talking a lot of things. So specifically, what do you want to know about? What's my opinion?
Well, let's see what Bill has to say. I'm going to see let's see what he has to ask you about what we were talking about. Go ahead.
Well, I wouldn't ask her questions. I would let her share whatever she wants, if she wants, and not force her to do it. I wouldn't do that to anybody. I'm very willing, and Carol is too. And you guys can, anybody who's listening to us knows that now. You don't know before. But that's not the case with everybody, and that's perfectly okay. Sometimes we grow into being comfortable about it, and we're not ready yet, and that's fine too. However, I'm sure Kim has some kind of identification with some of what, you know, both of us said. And, you know, she also has her own experience that might relate to some of what both of us said. And it's all fine.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I still struggle a lot. I mean, and I'm sure, you know, some of still, I just struggle in the area of everything. Specifically, everything. No. But that's the way I feel right now. No, I have
I have medications that I take every day, like for fibromyalgia, because I have that. And so I was kind of listening, but I think I might have actually kind of zoned out a second. So that's why I didn't know exactly what you were talking about and you wanted me to talk about.
Okay.
But
okay.
We put her to sleep. I thought I scared her.
No, you didn't scare me.
Oh, I'm teasing,
yeah.
I'm teasing. I'm teasing.
Yeah,
but, well, you know, everybody's different. Let's put it this way, you know what I'm saying? Everyone is different. Now, I turned into a rough, tough person, and I'm still a rough, tough person because that's how I've had to live my life, and I don't regret it, okay?
And I just
other people, I was just going to say, other people.
I just tried to be sweet. Yeah, I tried to be sweet with everybody, and I wanted to make everybody happy, and, you know, that was just my goal for the last 35 years, and, you know, and it doesn't work that way. I mean, it got to the point now where I am tired of trying to make everybody happy, and I'm willing to do things for myself happy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's
because
great.
Nobody else is really doing that for me. So,
right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you, Carol. Earlier, when we were talking about, you know, just like relationships and stuff, it's just I don't know that I could ever either really have a really good relationship with somebody because I would maybe possibly like the opportunity eventually, but you know, I don't think that that's something that I have to have because I think that I've gotten to the point in my life where I just want to take care of me and work on me. And that's a nice place to be. Really, I love my kids and I love my grandkids, but you know, at some point you've got to just say, "Okay, it's me time." And so I'm trying to do
healthy.
A lot more of that these days.
That's healthy. It's healthy because you know what? We were put on this earth, and there's no reason this God's earth why we shouldn't be happy, okay? I mean, people have made us very unhappy. But it's time for us now. It's like I'm at the point in my life, my kids say, "Mom, go out and meet someone." Sure, I've had guys ask me out, but I don't want to go with them. First of all, I don't like casinos. I'm not a lucky person. If I went to the casino, I'd lose money, and that would make me mad, and that would be the end of that date.
Right, that would not be happy. That'd be a happy experience.
I don't like that. And I don't like to hang out in bars anymore because if I do hang out in a bar, then I'm going to want a drink. So that's not going to work, okay? And I certainly don't like, you know, just hanging out in people's houses where they're smoking pot and all this other stuff. A lot of people, now it's legal for God's sake, so it doesn't matter. But they act so stupid. And then I think back, boy, I must have looked like a real horse's ass, you know? I didn't smoke pot. I didn't, believe it or not, I didn't like it. I would take two hits and they thought, oh, God, she's going to get high now. This is so stupid, right? And I'd do double tokes. Oh, yes, I did. And I'd feel nothing. And I said, this is what you're wasting your money on? You know? And then they'd get mad because I wasn't stupid like them, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't acting the same. So I don't want to do that.
And I think everybody has their drug of choice, too, you know? So, you know, some people like that. Some people like to drink. And it sounds like drinking was maybe yours a little bit, Carol, for a while.
Oh, I drank. I drank so much, my fingers bloated and my kidneys pounded, and I knew I had to stop.
I've never been a big drinker.
Oh, I love to drink. Yeah, I really did, and I still would, you know, or could. I mean, I could, but I won't because I put too many years into it now. My last drink was in 1981. Now, do you think I'm going to blow that?
Yeah.
Okay. No, absolutely not. I don't care if people drink around me. I admit in the summertime, and summer's coming, when I go to barbecues and people like to have me over because I make them laugh and all this other stuff. And, you know, so we have a good time.
Perfect,
you know, well, it's good to have humor. Thank God. If I lost everything else, I wouldn't care. I have to have my humor, because humor keeps a person happy, keeps them going. You know what I'm saying? Yes, there's time for sadness, but I've seen too much sadness, so I like to be happy, carefree. That's why I don't want guys living with me, okay? I'm my own boss. I have no one I have to answer to. I can come and go as I want. I can sleep until 3 o'clock in the afternoon if I want. I can do anything I want. I don't have that pressure that I had too often in my life from people, okay? And I don't want it. So when you said that it's time for you to take care of you now, I'm at the point in my life where I don't want to have to answer to anybody. Maybe God.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
But not the people, no. Mm-mm. So find me a guy who has hair on his head. I don't like baldies. Okay, I'm telling you, you know how I am. Now, I don't want to look in somebody's head and see my face, okay? I don't want to see that. Because they have a way of, like, greasing up their heads or something. I don't know what they do. I don't know. And so I want a guy that has hair. If he has a bike, that's a plus. If he doesn't, that's okay. That's all right. Let's say he has to be pleasant. I don't want him to be, he can have one or two drinks, I don't care, but stop there. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And, you know, with the pot, I don't know, now it's legal, everybody's doing it. I could go down the street and get it if I wanted it, but I don't really want it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, you know, but I don't know, just someone to watch movies with, go out to dinner, do some nice things, maybe ghost hunting, I don't know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I would go into New York City because I love the city, but there's too much trouble right now. Someone just got shot again today for no reason at all. I don't know why.
I know, it's so scary everywhere. It's just,
yeah.
You know, even our, like our downtown Denver isn't the same as it used to be. Just so
everything
in
the city areas are changing. My granddaughter is very much like me, okay? She loves New York City. I love New York City. But this isn't the New York that I was brought up in or went to. We were only in Coney Island. We went to Coney Island all the time. Bill, you know where Coney Island is. You know, and and we had so much fun. And even in the other parts of the city, you know, the museums and all the things. I mean, the city to me has so much to offer. But today, it doesn't, because you have to wear a helmet or something. I don't know what you should do. You know, you don't know who's going to get picked out for no reason at all. It's crazy.
Or a lot of places just aren't even able to open because there's not enough people working. And, you know, we've got so many homeless. It's like,
there's all kinds of reasons. And then, too, because so much was actually taken away from the police departments, you know. I mean, they're scared to death to do anything, a lot of them, because then they're going to say, oh, it's this, it's that. You don't like me because of this or that, whatever. Without getting, you know, too specific here, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, they can't be police officers as much as they should be, all right? Now, if you want to bring in social workers and all this other stuff people I've worked with, I am a counselor. They could even pull, in fact, when I lived in Dover, they pulled me downtown to work with people, 3 o'clock in the morning. Carol's up. Yeah, let's get her. And but you know what? That doesn't change things. Sometimes people need to go to jail. I hate to put it this way, but they do for two reasons. It shows them boundaries. We talked about boundaries before. And then also, too, it keeps society safer, depending on what it is that they, you know, are in jail for. And do I like people going to jail? We still have to pay for them. We have to pay for that. A little bit comes out of your paychecks. Look at your paychecks. There's a certain amount of money that comes out for programs, a certain amount of money, just a little bit. But if you do that to everyone that's working, they come up with a huge amount of money, okay? And that goes into the programs and into the jail systems and so forth. So you know, I mean, it's too bad we have to have, you know, people who are so messed up. But as I always say, look from where they came. And that's where the social workers, the ones that are trained properly, can be used right inside of the home. And certainly don't tell them when you're coming, just show up. That's a better way of doing it. Probation officers do that many times with their probationers. Instead of saying, okay, I'm going to be there Tuesday at 4 o'clock, they'll show up Monday at 6 o'clock or something. And then they can see the real person and what they're really doing. Are they abiding by law? Or are they screwing up? Are they, you know, whatever? So these things are important for the social workers to learn. And it's hard. It is hard, you know, because there's so many people who are in trouble, you know, where they need to be watched and they need the social services. But not when you're called to a domestic violence scene. Sorry, that's not very smart. Because you see, so many times they have guns too, don't they? They have weapons.
It's one of the most dangerous situations that an officer will find himself in, answering
yes.
a domestic violence call.
Exactly.
Somebody's just called in. Did anybody see who that was? Somebody's on the
I don't have my
holding on
cell.
The line.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Let me see. 619. Not sure who this is, but let's find out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. 619, this is Bill Murray. I'm here with Carol and with Amy and I'm asking
Kim.
With Kim. Sorry, Kim. Who is this and where are you from?
Hi, Bill Murray and Carol and Kim. It's Sarah from San Diego.
Okay, Sarah. Regular girl. Great to see you. How you doing down there in San Diego?
Okay. That sounds
yeah.
great. I've been
yeah.
listening. Yeah.
Well, we're having
those
fun
people.
Because we don't have a guest we have to worry about today. it's a week without guests. Oh my God. I did get one for Wednesday, and I have tomorrow and Thursday booked too. I don't have one for Friday yet.
I have a new phone device, and the bummer of it is it doesn't have a mute button that I know of. And so somebody just started drilling, so this is not going to work probably. What a shame. I was going to say something about the rehabilitation of the pedophile population.
Right.
Which was, what you, oh, announcement, yeah, no, it's not going to work. Oh, well. Keep going. You guys are doing great. Oh, wait,
well,
I found
you know,
it. Here it is. I have one. A mute. Here's my mute. All right. Okay. You guys talk amongst yourselves for a while.
You're fine until the drilling starts.
Okay. All right. So I loved how you were, all the information that you gave out, Bill, about the impossibility of the rehabilitation of this particular population, right? And I just happened to the other day hear a show that Peggy Hall did about Elon Musk's proposal about a chip, a microchip, to help with the obesity population. So, yes, this is indeed true. So as you were talking, I thought about that, right, the chip. Hey, you know, of course, if they'll have this chip for the obesity, Elon Musk has that, and perhaps they could do that for this population. And I went, nah, you know, of course, there'll be a naysay on that. But I thought to myself, gee, I'm not, you know, why does that population need to be with the rest of the population? See, aren't there other kinds of work that they could be doing that doesn't involve children? Because, you know, it just is an addiction, and I don't like that word. And thank goodness what seems to be going on out there in the internet world with this word addiction is that it's actually moving towards trauma-based recovery anyway, which is a good thing because that's what we know about it anyway, right? So that's the direction that it's moving in anyway. You know, it's not so much about the substance it's about what underlies that, which is trauma-based, you know, and you know that. So that's a good thing. Okay, but back to what I was saying. So it's like, okay, so what are some things that, you know, as we, you know, they are removed from the regular population, because it is an addition, though, because it's about, like, what's going on for these people is that they have this preoccupation with it. Because they're doing it online, too, as well, like anywhere
oh,
that
God,
they can
yes.
get to it, because it preoccupies them. So that's really what we need to work with. So people who are sincerely trying to work with that and help with that, right,
mm-hmm.
they're looking at people who are doing that are looking for people who really know how to work with addiction, not just people who are, like, you know, saying that they know how to do it. So, what is that? How does that work? What's the nuts and bolts of all that? What does result? And I started to think of something that happened.
We lost you there at the end, Sarah. We lost you at the end there, but we heard 90% or more of what you said, just not the end.
Okay.
Piece.
Well, I'm getting. All right. So how?
That's better.
It's about, okay, good. So it's about kind of in searching for that, in the curiosity of that, hey, what works with that? What, you know, what's the answer to that, to this underlying kind of
thing? I can't hear.
If you're
talking okay. about rehabilitation of the pedophile, is that what you're talking about? I can't hear you right.
It's the answer to it. It's, yeah, so it's. So does everybody think they know the story in the Bible about Jonah and the whale?
Mm.
At least think they know it. I reheard it a couple of days ago, and it's really interesting. And as it's related to what I'm doing here anyway, or what we're doing here anyway, which is, anyway, the story is, Jonah is known as one of the prophets in the Bible because he could hear God talking to him, and God told him to go to Nineveh. Jonah said, no, are you kidding? Those Nineveh is like, to us, the pedophiles. Those the pedophiles. I don't like the pedophiles. He said, Nineveh, that's where, they're the sinners. I don't want to go to Nineveh. I don't want to go to Nineveh. I'm not going. In fact, I'm going in the opposite direction. So Jonah is known as, and I never knew this, not really. It's like I went through my whole life thinking I knew the story of Jonah, and it's Jonah in the belly of the whale. I didn't know that Jonah's kind of known as just a rebel. It's like he hears the voice of God, and he says, no, I'm not doing it. And he gets on this boat, and this big storm comes, and he's on a boat with all these, like, pagans, I guess you would call them. Not on a boat with people of his God, who he hears the voice of, right? But my point of this story is, see, look who we are. We're dealing with the pedophiles, too, aren't we? It's a hard job, you know?
It is a hard job, Sarah.
Okay? And so, but now, okay, now back to my question. What are some things that they could do, actually? You know what? It's to play a musical instrument. If you have to learn how to play a musical instrument, it takes up all of your attention. It has nothing to do with thinking about children. Or an obsession.
It's there about power.
Skills and some things. There are some things that those kinds of people can be given to do that can maybe take their minds off of their addiction, their preoccupation. It's like, now what's difficult is finding people who are willing to even be around them.
But there's a reason for that. Sarah, think for a minute.
Of course there is.
We cannot jeopardize our children, okay? If we know that people are pedophiles, and of course we know they're out there, but those of us who stick our head in the sand, like they say, we have to address the issue and the problem. Yes, they're human beings. No one's saying they're not human beings, but they are dysfunctional human beings that are going out and they're hurting children to the point where they're ruining a lot of our lives, okay, until we get the help that we need, and that's not fair. So what do we do with people like this? We can't have them in population, okay? Because
no,
the more we have them in population, yeah, we've got to put them, we have to get them, you know, you can't isolate them because they're all over the place. There's so many pedophiles. They're in our school system. Think about where they are. They're in our camps. They're in our school system. They're in our churches. They're everywhere. To gather them all up is impossible. This is why I always say, let's work with the kids. Let's teach our children how to be safer. Can we stop them? Because Kim had said, well, you know, we're not going to get all of them. No, of course not. But it would certainly cut down if society would get over this stupid taboo, and I'll use the word taboo, of talking to their children. You're not doing them a service. You're doing a disservice to them. Because you teach them how to cross the street, you talk about stranger danger because it's easy, okay? But if we don't teach them about how to keep themselves safe if some weirdo does come up to them, well, then that child is going to get kidnapped, or that child is going to groom the family and that child, too. Say they're, it's a neighbor down the street. That's where the barbecues come in. Let's get the neighbor down. He's new to the neighborhood, or she's new to the neighborhood. And the kid gets groomed. The kid gets destroyed physically, mentally, emotionally, all the things that we speak about on the show. So I think that since we can't go around and just gather up all these pedophiles that are dispersed everywhere in every type of you know, type of organization, and as well, even in our government, okay? As long as we have those people and also those that have the desire to want to see pornography with children, you know, being brutalized in those pornographies, you know, we have the Johns and we have the pimps. We have such a sick society with different, you know, satellite divisions of it. We have the pedophiles, and then you have those that are the pimps, and you have those that are the Johns. The Johns have the thirst. So, you see, there's just too many things to work with. So, we can't lump them all up in one sum. But what we can do is to educate our children, those that come from dysfunctional homes.
See, the boundary,
they had,
the boundary is the boundary.
Absolutely.
But if a boundary is a boundary, is a boundary, then
then what? It's then, something.
Then whether it's sex you're talking about or not becomes almost extemporaneous, doesn't it? Doesn't it seem that it's the issue of, it's more about that the boundary part and the integrity, the lack of integrity behind that in everyday language and action is a real problem and issue in communication.
You have to have boundaries. Boundaries should be a part
of working
with the pedophiles, you know, to teach them boundaries.
So children,
this is
if children were taught that were really important, that,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well,
that they,
it is important.
Well,
but if we don't have, if we don't
they
have.
They said no.
Here. Let's look at it this way. Sarah, what are they trying to teach in school now? To kindergartners up to third grade. They're trying to teach them about those little boys who really should be little girls and all this other stuff. Is that going to help keep them away from pedophiles? No.
See, I'm
not
sure
the
from what I'm hearing, I'm not sure that parents are able to find out what's going on in school. From what I'm hearing, I'm not sure that parents are able to really find out what's really going on inside the classroom. So I don't know.
The only thing I do know,
I'm not sure,
is if we teach our children safety, okay, safety measures, at a very young age, like Kim had said earlier, and we'll know when that time is right, because when you give them a bath, they'll say, Mommy, what's this, or Daddy, what's that, and all this other stuff. And age appropriately, you teach them. This is what we teach on NASCA, age appropriate. And this way, you know, like the little six-year-old girl that I talk about from time to time, in her neighborhood, two guys were going around and around and around the white van, and they saw this pretty little girl outside, and they wanted her. They wanted to take her. They wanted to kidnap her. They wanted to go and pimp her out, okay, a little six-year-old. So what do? They actually get out of their van. This is how cocky they were. Now, we're talking in a neighborhood, all right? They go up, and the kid's outside with other children. They're playing. They're playing kickball or something. I don't know what they're doing. Anyway, they're outside playing in the front yards. And this girl had been spoken to by her parents. This will never forget. I'll never forget this. So she's keeping her eye out on the ball, and she's keeping her eye out on these guys that are getting closer and closer and closer. Finally, she realizes, hey, they're after me, you know? So she said to everyone, everybody scream at the top of your lungs, because this is what her parents had taught her. Scream, scream, scream. We don't know you. Go away. Scream, scream, scream. And the one guy was cocky enough to get even a little bit closer, and she kicked him in the shin really hard. And the parents came out, and someone had called 911. Before they got out of that neighborhood, they were caught. They were caught. Now, you see, if we teach our children what to look out for, then, you know, how to stay safer, that's not going to totally solve the problem, but it'll certainly help. And that's what we need to do, is start helping our kids. The kids that come
from home.
If I had children
right now, I would definitely have it involved in some kind of religious church thing. I swear I would.
Yeah, but you know what? A lot of the religious church things don't always work either, do they? Look at Bill with all his things.
No,
that he
you're right. You're right. Yeah, no, I would be afraid to leave him alone in that group too, I think.
You know, I think on a serious note here, hey, the church helped me. It was Catholic, all right? I was 30 years old.
No, I know. I'm shaking my head, too. I'm serious.
That was amazing. That was amazing. But they find out it's not just the Catholics. Now, come on. It's the Protestants. It's the Methodists. Pedophiles go where children go, and they try
and
to get into the
youth. And all these cult stories?
They go everywhere.
All these cult stories, too?
Sure, everywhere. Hey, they're down in Disneyland. I heard that on TV the other day.
I know, right?
All right. They are everywhere. They are everywhere. And this is why no child is safe anywhere. Not to scare the kid, to educate the kid.
You know, I was thinking that too,
like
while you were talking. I was thinking, like, what if your child, like, and, you know, with all the internet stuff and the TV stuff, it's like, and also, like, what if your child comes to you terrified, right, and says, you know, what about all this?
I'm here. Because they're scared. Look what pedophiles do.
I was that kind of child. I was that kind of scared child. That was in the 50s.
Yeah, but you know what? If the parents, here's the thing that they've, this is how they keep a kid from being scared to tell, all right? When that child is start asking questions, you know, what's this, what's that, like kids do, and you start educating them about their bodies, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, and the boundaries, all that stuff, a little at a time, age appropriately, you get a bond with that child. Because mommy and daddy love us so much, or love me so much, that they're talking to me not just about this or that, they're talking about everything. And if the parents do it right, they build a bond between the child and the parent, and the child will tell them, even if the pedophile says, don't you dare, the child will tell them. And they'll even say to the child, look, if he offers you candy, if he offers you drinks, if he offers you cigarettes, whatever the case might be, or if he tells you he's going to hurt someone in the family, don't believe him. Come to mommy and daddy, and we will believe you. You see, you talk to your child that way, then the child has a place to go if something does, God forbid, happen, if someone does approach him and tries to groom him. The child who doesn't have a chance is the child who doesn't have parents who are into it enough to even care enough to talk to them about it. Okay? There's so much dysfunction in that family. Where do they go? Who do they talk to? What do they do? These are the kids that get kidnapped. These are the kids, you know, because there isn't that bonding between the parents. They don't feel like they can go to the parent for whatever reason. These are the kids that end up in trouble, okay? They end up murdered, or they end up, you know, being taken far away and pimped out on the street. I had a friend that got pimped out. They found her. She's gone for 3 weeks. Now, you see, these are the kids that get into terrible problems. So if we take that problem away by doing our job as a parent, all right, then it's like the child who was 6 years old knew what to tell the other kids to do, and they even kicked the guy in the shin, and they were caught, both of them, and they went to jail. And you see, that's what we have to do. So since we can't gather up all of these pedophiles who go where children go, they align themselves to jobs so that they're near children so they can find their prey. And that's P-R-E-Y, not P-R-A-Y. What they do is, you know, we have to work with the children. And my heart goes out to those kids who don't have parents, who will not be smart enough to say, hey, this could happen to my kid, or I want them to stay as innocent for as long as they can stay innocent for. They'll learn about it later on. They'll learn about it the other way, yes, just like the pedophiles that wrote that article. They'll learn it from them. And statistics back that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's your answer.
All right, well, we got to think about wrapping up the show here. So we have about a minute each for each of us. If anybody wants a final thought, that you get a minute to say it. And then we'll play the music and say goodnight. Who has something they'd like to say? Well, I'd like to say that, you know, it's not the kids that need the teaching, it's the parents. Because the parent that's taught correctly will automatically lead their child down the right path. And the one that's not taught will, you know, will think, well, he'll get it somehow. You know, somebody will tell him. I don't need to do it. You know, and that's not right. It's the parent who needs the teaching. And then that parent who's appropriately taught will pass on. Now, here's the other thing. We made a big stink about trying to teach this stuff in school, a few years back, and everybody was all excited because the school systems were going to take it over. And look at how many school systems have agreed they're going to do it, and none of them have done it. And I told you, I said it at the time. You know, it looks good, but it's not going to. It won't. I don't predict it's going to work, and it didn't. So
No. You
have to, you know, whatever you do, you have to really put some teeth in it. And you have to also sort of jump over some of the fears, which is what's stopping a lot of this, is fear. You know, it's self-generated fear. The parent has the fear, not the kid. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want our children to be taught whatever XYZ is because we're afraid of XYZ. The kid's not afraid of XYZ. And you're absolutely right. Age appropriately, these children ought to be taught. But it's not about body parts. there is no such thing as age appropriate for body parts. That's when they start talking. You know, the other stuff, though, how to interact with each other and who to be careful about and so forth, that you do age appropriately, especially when you get into a little bit older when this, you have to fold in dating and pregnancies and stuff like that. But anyway, thank you very much for a good show, everybody. I'll give it back to Kim so she can finish it up. But I want you to know I'm going to be the guest tomorrow night. It's one of those hyphenate shows. And anybody that can make it, I'd appreciate them, you know, coming on. I'm going to talk about the 12 traditions tomorrow. We haven't done that in a while. But they're really important to NASCA and for people to understand that NASCA runs according to those spiritual principles. So I think I'm going to go through them tomorrow night.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody. God bless you, and I love you all.
Well, that was a good show. Good night, everybody.
Okay. Good night.
Good night now.
Thanks. Someone playing the music?
Another tomorrow, 'cause that's gone away.